Yudbeis Ma'am Cheshvan, Wednesday the 20th of October, Rabbi Yehoshua Frickers. Copyright, a Torah right.
Thank you very much. It says in the first Lema, Revela Bas Nomi Leash, the first Lema, first Nefesh, first Aguf. I'd like to thank Torahway for giving me the opportunity to share this Dvar Halach with you. I also obviously like to thank the people present and all the people listening. Now, the title was Copyright, Torah Right, so I'll try and keep it original. But I would like to clarify that whereas there was a question mark at the end of the title, Torah Right, there is actually wide consensus among the poskim that there is indeed a halachic background, a halachic concept of copyright. But the topic copyright is a rather confusing topic, and some misunderstandings are rather vague. For example, often people have questions, say when it comes to regarding copying tapes, CDs, and digital or books. Is there a difference when copies for personal use? Keep it internal in the family, for example, non-commercial. What about if you only copy a part of a book, part of a tape? Is there a difference if it's from an akum? So these are many questions people have. And obviously interesting features of copyright is that I bought the book, I bought the tape, why can I not do with it what I like? Why don't I have a right to copy it? It's my tape now. So we'll try and clarify this. We'll look in the sources in the Gemara, which are giving you some handouts, and the poskim. We'll try and define the parameters of copyright and see the implications of halacha. Now, I'd just like to make a little disclaimer here that this is a very intricate topic, and each case needs to be judged in its own merit. So this is not going to be taken really halacha lemaisa mamush. This is to give people to be informed now about this concept, and maybe a little bit more ideas of what to ask, how to ask, when to ask. Also, I would like to state, why don't we put it simply down to the concept of dina de malchus adina, which normally is understood to imply that there's a law of the land forbidding copyright. That should be it. Why do we need to have this whole shit, all these hangouts, gemaras? So the truth is that also is a topic in itself. But generally, the poskim say that copyright, the dina de malchusa, the basis of dina de malchusa is a right given to the melucha, to the government, to the king of the land, in order able to ensure law and order, things which are the interest of the malchus as a whole. But when it comes to details in halacha, the saying of the Shoinim poskim lo tehei Torah shlema shelanu kesicha b'teila shelahem. Our Torah, our complete Torah, which is grounded halacha mishum Sinai with Savoras, Gemaras, shouldn't become void before the law of the land, which hasn't got as firm basis and logic to our Torah. So when it comes to details in halacha, often the rule of din v'chus will not apply, and we should go according where there is explicit halachas, we should follow the halachas that we have from the Shulchan Aruch. So now let us begin with a little historical sketch of copyright. Copyright was enacted as a law in the United Kingdom in 1709, Statute of Anne, and let me just say that obviously I'm no expert in copyright law, or the likes, but the general concepts are well known, and thanks to modern technology, the information is easily readily available. So, as we said, it was introduced in 1709. As is often the case, the sources in halacha, where they refer to it, predate this by around 200 centuries. The Ramah from the Shulchan Aruch, in his Sefer Tshuvos and Siman Yud, he's really the first source, the primary source in halacha to this. That's no coincidence, because really the whole problem of copyright only came about thanks to the innovations in printing, the printing press, because it was easy. Someone could invest a lot of effort getting the printing press and printing a sefer. It would easily be copied. Printing was accessible in a mass way. So the Ramah, who was around from the beginning of when the printing press was invented, it's close to there. So he discusses a case of the Maram Padva, who's in the big poskim. He printed the first Rambam, Mishnah Torah, the Halacha Sefer of the Rambam. He was the first one who printed it. And then this, the Rampadva had a partner, it was a Goy, who went ahead and also printed it, went against the trust and the agreements that he had with the Rampadva. And the Rambam was discussing whether it's forbidden now, as a result of, it's going to infringe on his, obviously his profits, and even cause him loss. So would it be permitted for him to now go, for other Jews to go and buy the Sefer? So that's where it's discussed in Halacha. And I have to say, when it comes to Sfarim, as the Rambam was talking about, apart from the regular halachas that we're going to discuss today, there's also, we find, special takonas, the chachamim made gezeiros. If people, one looks in Sfarim, from printed many years ago, they often have written the haskomas are more connected, related to protecting the rights of the author than about actual tefillin of the sefer. And so there was it seems to be in the poskim that they wanted to encourage people to print Sfarim, to have it available for people to learn. They were takonas, special, they enacted special rights to people who printed authors of Sfarim to, in other words, encourage and to, there should be a lot of Torah learning available. Now, we're going to define the general terms that we're handling today. So copyright, everyone knows, simply states the right to copy. And that is given to the originator of an original work. I'll just print out some examples. They're on the UK government website, literary works, novels, structure manuals, computer programs, dramatic works, dance or mime, musical works, artistic works, including paintings, engravings, photographs, layouts of typographical arrangements, recordings of a work. These are all examples, things are protected by copyright. Now, copyright is there, right, automatic. Most countries, the person doesn't need to write copyright, it's automatic. And anyone that we say is the creator of the work has that right, and duration is limited usually after the death of the creator of the work. It's limited, usually sometimes 70 years. Now there's another concept we're also going to touch on today, which is closely related to that, is the right of a patent. Now, a patent, as opposed to copyright, is not automatic. A person has to apply for it, and the duration of the patent is usually less. And that is someone who has a useful invention. And he has to share the idea of that invention once, in order to be able to entitle to have this right to patent, to protect his rights, he has to share that with the public. Obviously, I don't think Einstein owned E equals MC squared, even though that is probably the most valuable equation around. That is too far removed. There has to be something useful, related to something useful. Also, I think we could say that it's impossible to say that Einstein owned E equals MC squared. It was discovery. It's something which is out there. It's a truth in the world. You can't say he owns it, it's his. This could have also ramifications to Sifrei Halacha. How can you say someone, an author, owns these halachas? This is something which is Torah's Hefkeler Abim. Ideas are out there in the world. He discovered it. He didn't create it. He didn't invent it. Really, the issue of copyright and patents relates to things a person created, so maybe they could be considered his. And that's what we're going to discuss today. Now, what they do have in common, though, the patents and copyrights, is they are called intellectual property rights. What does that mean? That means the objects here are not tangible. When a person, for example, makes a song, he doesn't care about the disc that the song is written on, the hardware. What he's concerned about is the song. Someone's going to copy the song. He wants to assert his rights over the song. Similarly, if someone makes an artistic work, as opposed to a Rembrandt, where let's say the canvas itself is the thing that has the value to it. Someone who just takes a photo, has artistic work, an idea, it's his creativity there which he's concerned about. Someone has a design. It's the design they're worried about, it's not the hardware that they're worried about. So their rights, they're trying to assert their rights in something which is inherently not tangible, and it's abstract. So this, another example, typographical arrangements. Famous Vilna Shas, amongst Achim Ra'om, they laid out, they created the arrangements of the Vilna Shas as we know it today. So there, it's the arrangement that they want to assert their rights over. It's not the actual pages, it's not actual Gemaras, that one particular set of Shas. They're worried about someone taking the idea behind the arrangement. It's something that's inherently not tangible. That's a key insight when we approach this topic. And the central question is going to be, how does one assert one's rights of a copy reproduction in such a way? So, to begin with, there are two possibilities, I think, how to do this. And one of them would be to say that someone copying the work of another person, considered stealing Gizela. And another option would be to say that this is included in the category of Yoyrod L'Unofse Shel Chaveroi. That means that a person mustn't infringe on another person's business, making him lose his profits. There are possible differences between these two concepts, and now we're going to walk through both these concepts and see how they apply, and if they can apply to us here. So let's start with Gezel, stealing. Obviously, the essential element of stealing is to establish that the person has ownership here. We can apply a concept of ownership. And as we have said, the ownership that we're dealing with when it comes to patents or copyright is something which is not tangible. So is it possible to have ownership on something which is not tangible? And we said we're discussing a song, for example, a design, someone who manufactures knitwear, and he pays designers thousands of pounds to make designs. Someone comes along, he's a wholesaler, so he goes to a retailer. Can the retailer just, thank you very much, take a photo of it and go and copy it? So the question is, do we say that that's called stealing because he owns that design, even though it's not tangible? So let's turn to the first Marimokum, which I gave the top. So this is, sorry about the, didn't come out very legible on top. This is Gemara and Baba Basra, Daf Samach Gimel. It's the fourth parak of Baba Basra. So the Gemara says, Gemara is discussing a case where a person, for example, Gemara starts with a person selling a tree and he wants to retain the rights to the fruit. Selling a tree, but he wants to keep the fruit. So we know there's a rule, ain't of the makne dabar shaloi bala ilam. A person cannot sell something which does not yet exist in the world. So the only way to do it is to retain the tree, the rights in the tree itself, concerning the fruit. So it's called dekela peirosov. That's what the terminology of the Gemara. That's the only way he can retain the rights to the fruit. So the Gemara gives an example about a Levi. Gemara says, Tanya Rabbanan, Ben Levi Shema Chasod El Yisrael. Ben a Levi who sold a field to Yisrael. So it means to just Yisrael as opposed to Kohen Levi. I want to retain the Maiserishon, which is the tenth, which is the rights of the Levi. He can keep it, Maiserishon Shaloi. So the Gemara skip a few lines. The Gemara asks, three lines later, Amai ain't on the makna davar shaloi bala ilam. It hasn't come yet. The fruits do not yet exist. So the answer is, Kivan da omale am nosh maisa shirishon shali. Since he says that, shiyura shari lamoko maisa. He keeps the moko maisa, which means he keeps the field, right in the field itself concerning the fruits. From that, Rish Lakish deducts, the view says, Zoysoy meres, Omar Shak Zoysoy meres, you can learn from this. Amoicha bais the chavir, someone sells a house to his friend. He says that he wants to keep the Jyota Aloin, we'll see what that means. Jyota Aloin Shaloi. So we'll see what does that mean. So the Rosh explains, different ways to understand this in the Gemara. Rosh Bamlan is one way. The Tosis, Rosh, and other Rishonim learn, this is talking concerning someone who has a courtyard, and he sells that courtyard to his neighbor. Now he wants to retain the right, but one day maybe he wants to build a balcony which is going to protrude into that courtyard. He wants to retain the right to do that. So how does he do that? So one could simply say, he keeps the airspace. But the Gemara says, according to these Rishonim, there's a problem. The airspace is something which is not tangible. So how can you just sell a courtyard and retain the airspace? So that's how Rishonim, that's the problem here. So the Rosh says, explains, the Gemara's answer is, just like Davar Shaloi Balaylam we discussed before, he keeps the tree for the fruit, he keeps the actual courtyard concerning the rights to the airspace. That's how the Rosh learns. Otherwise, one cannot have ownership of something not tangible. However, the Ramban argues, the Ramban says, I agree. When it comes to selling, if we were to sell the airspace alone, not the courtyard, that would be true. It's not possible to transfer, to make a kinyan, to transfer ownership on something which is not tangible. However, just to retain it, where he had owned it already, and now he wants to retain that ownership, that is possible to do. He does not need to keep a right in the courtyard for the airspace, he can sell the courtyard totally and keep the airspace. So here we seem to have this question that we're discussing, this seems to be the argument here between the Rosh and Ramban. The other, Rimi Gash, agrees with the Rosh, whether one can have ownership over something which is not tangible. Now, this is the Machlokes Rishonim, and the Siva seems to usually go with the Ramban. So, but also, we have to figure out if it's exactly comparable, because the airspace is inherently part of the courtyard to attach to something physical. These designs, it's not 100% clear whether it's something which is really totally separate, or since obviously you can't have a design without being attached to something physical, so it's not clear that it's exactly comparable. Now, so we'll look at another source perhaps, see if we can establish ownership on something that's not tangible, and that is the principle, which is the second one I brought at the bottom, Umen Koine Beshvach Keli. So the example is based on the Mishnah, and also the Umlin attacking the Kilkilu Chayov Nishalim. Someone who gives to a craftsman something to repair and he damages it, he has to pay. Mishnah continues, Nosan Lachar Shela Teva Migdol, gives the carpenter different forms of boxes, the attacking to repair, the Kilkilu, and he damages him, Chayov Nishalim, he has to pay. So Moran now goes to explain, discuss the what happened here. Did someone give to this craftsman, the carpenter, raw material wood? And he built a box, and then the craftsman smashed a nail by mistake and broke it. Is that the case? And then on that we say, craftsman has to pay for the box. Or no. The case is, he gave him a box to repair, and he broke it. What's the difference? The Gemara explains that if someone gives wood, raw material, to a craftsman, and he makes the box, which could be equally someone gives wood and makes a table, a chair, could be that that table, that chair, that box, the craftsman now owns. So therefore, if he breaks it, he does not have to pay to the person that gave him the wood, the raw material, because the box, he owns. That's called Umen Koine Beshvach Keli. A craftsman owns the shvach, the improvement that he's made to this raw material. That's an interesting concept, because the raw material he does not own. The raw material is owned, definitely, all the raw material, the glue, the wood, the nails, is owned by the person that gave it to him to make. So what does he own here? The raw material is not his, so he makes a table. But if he doesn't own raw material, how can he own the table? The table is, in essence, just raw material reshaped and fashioned into a table. So there are poskim who learn that it doesn't literally mean, it's not something literal that he owns the box. So we're saying it's, how can he own the box, the form? But there are poskim who do learn, indeed, that this is a proper kinyan. He owns the form, the format, the form that he has created. You know, this is something which is also not tangible. This can't be separated really in essence from the raw material. It's possible to say that the craftsman owns the form. There might be nafkuminas. If someone gives a keli, say a piece of metal to a goy, to fashion into a knife, well, that knife required tvilas kelim. On the one hand, the raw material belongs to the Jew. He just fashioned it. On the other hand, if we say that the Umen is kind of acquires this new form which is created, so maybe that would require tefilas kelim, because we know something you buy from a goy, one has to toivel. In other words, if you say Umen kein b'shvach keli, when you give the, in essence, you're buying back, you're buying the table back, or here you're buying this knife back from the goy. You're not just paying him for his work. So perhaps this would also be a concept we can apply here to say that someone makes a design, this is an improvement on something tangible. It's possible to say we can separate the two. There's an ownership on something not tangible, but we can also establish ownership on something which is tangible. So maybe now it would be possible to say someone who takes that not tangible thing is considered stealing. And so they also cover patents, where really the improvement has happened. Someone who invents, for example, a mouse trap. Someone now builds a mousetrap. Where's the Shvach Keli come from? It's come from the person who invented the idea. He's really the creator of this thing. So maybe that would also be able to be considered a kinyan. And therefore, perhaps there is Gezela. So these are two options. To say that there is possible to have ownership on a non-tangible item, and therefore someone who takes it and doesn't pay for it, we consider deemed stealing. Now, both of these things are not, in each of these two things, the first one we said from the Gemara and Baba Basra, we said that by Tumah airspace, that's the Machlokes Rishonim, and so too Umen Koine Beshvach Keli, even though in some cases Shach says that's the Machlokes HaPoskim, whether we pass on Umen Koine Beshvach Keli, or the Machlokes Ephraim says that in some cases he definitely is Koine, but these things are not so clear cut. So I think we'll turn to the second concept that we mentioned, to see if that will be enough to assert the rights over the copying of your creation. Now we said it's called Yoyer Lumnosu Shel Chaveiroi. Now this is an extremely intricate sugya, and many different Arichos Gedolah, the Poskim Rishonim go to great depth to explain this concept and when it applies exactly. So we're going to try and extract the key points according to the opinion of the Chasam Sofer. He's one of the poskim, Torah poskim, discusses at great length. And his Teshuva Ayin Tes has a few pages going through this halacha. Now the source, sorry, I forgot to copy, but the source is a Gemara in Baba Basra, Daf Aleph Chaf Beis. So there the case is Yodim Moshe Chaveri, someone who opens a shop. He opens a fishmonger. Can someone else come and open another fish shop right next to him? So the Gemara says that if that person who opens the shop is from that same neighborhood, it's permitted. Someone from out of that neighborhood, out of that town, it'll be forbidden. That's the maskon of the Gemara, that's how we paskin. The Gemara, even though he's going to infringe, he's going to now, his profits are going to be less. There's going to be people now can choose between two shops, it's still permitted if he's from that neighborhood. Gemara asks on that, from a case, there was a fisherman who was going fishing, and he set the bait in the lake, in the river, and the fish were getting attracted to his bait. So Gemara says, it's forbidden now for another fisherman to come and try and catch fish there. So Gemara asks, is a contradiction. What's the difference? So the Gemara says, "Shani dogim diyav esiyaro." That's the Gemara, Loshna Gemara. So there's two main pshatim in that. So Rashi explains that by the fish, the dogim have already seen the bait. They're on the way. They're definitely destined to get caught by this fisherman. So now the second fisherman who comes, it's like he's stealing from him. These fish we consider like he's already been kind of them. It's like they've already been caught in his net. So therefore, there it is forbidden. Whereas in the case of a shop, the customers, we don't know, the customers are still at home, we don't know which shop they want to go to, they're not yet on the way to the first fisherman's shop, so we don't consider that you're taking anything from him. That's how Rashi learns. The Rumigash learns, the difference is that by the case of the fish, the first fisherman sets his bait. So the fish are coming, they're on the way. Now when the second fisherman starts putting his bait and setting up his bait, those fish are on the way, they're going to all get distracted, going to see something going on here, and they're going to all go away a different direction. In other words, he's caused a total substantial loss, this fisherman, it was day by day his livelihood. So his livelihood for today, he's going to lose his livelihood for today. So in that case, it's forbidden. So these are two very important conditions applied to infringing a person's rights, business rights, and that is, if it's like a deal, someone is about to do a deal, it's about to seal it, it's about to be closed. So it would be forbidden for someone else to come and take away that customer. Like, that's Rashi. And the Rimagash, someone who causes substantial loss to someone's business, and maybe the business is not going to be viable anymore, that would also be forbidden, even if the person is in the same neighborhood. Well, nowadays the world is a very international world, so it's probably considered like one neighborhood. Could be, maybe it depends on the business. But when there's these conditions, it'll be forbidden. So this, I think, would apply when it comes to copyrights. Someone has a business. Let's say this person who has manufactures knitwear, and he has 50 designs. And he pays thousands of pounds on a designer, choosing the yarn, choosing the factory. And he now goes to a retailer, and the retailer wants to copy one design. So now, we have to think about, so assuming that it's not considered stealing, that was the first part of the shiur, we have to now consider these two options. If the person's about, this manufacturer was about to close a deal, and now this person's going to infringe on that, so that would be a problem of Yoridim Losh Chaveiro. In those two scenarios, the poskim say, Tosfos learns, that's considered stealing and you can extract money. It's a very important point. Yoridim Losh Chaveiro, when we have those two conditions, considered stealing and you can extract money. So, in that case, perhaps in the case like we said, if he was about to close a deal and now a person breaks up that deal, that would be like stealing. However, if it's not a substantial loss, the person has 50 designs, so perhaps there will not be a problem considered stealing. So, when it comes to copyrights, like we're saying, one has to bear in mind all these factors. How much of damage are you causing to the person who created this item? Now, there is a third pshat in the Gemara, Shani Dog and Diyavis Tiraro, and that is, Rabbi Natan Tosfos in Kiddushin learns, that this person put effort, toil, perhaps money, invested into trying to catch these fish. And therefore it's forbidden for someone to come and take them from him. That means, it's not referring to someone necessarily who has a business. The Gemara says another example from Mishnah and Kiddushin. There's a poor man who's on top of an olive tree trying to collect olives. Menachiv Risha's eyes. While he's shaking the branches, some olives fall on the ground. Now this, he's risking his life. This poor man is climbing the top of an olive tree, collecting dates, putting tremendous amounts of effort and risk into it. It's forbidden for someone to come and collect these olives. Why? Because of this din, the Tosfos learns, someone who puts effort into creating something is forbidden to come now and you benefit on his back. Now, this is not necessarily connected to infringing on a person's business, and therefore one cannot extract money. The poor man cannot take away, claim back, he doesn't have a monetary claim on these olives, but it is forbidden. It's Mikri Rosha, it's called. Now this therefore would broaden this concept when it comes to copyrights, and even in cases where it might not be considered the infringing directly a substantial loss, where he's definitely losing money, he's out to close the deal and you're making him lose money, but since he's expended tremendous effort, usually in case of copyright, someone who has to pay the designers, in the case of a song, he's involved tremendous efforts and expenses, so therefore, according to this third pshat in the Gemara, it'd be forbidden to come and benefit on his back. As we said, it would not be able necessarily to extract money, though, because of that. So, in order, let's summarize what we've learned till now, and try and fit it in. We began with a few shilas applying to copyrights. We said, is it permitted for personal use? To copy something, a book, a song, etc. So, if it's gezel, it's been stealing, no matter what, it's stealing. Stealing is stealing. You're taking his songs and you're not paying for it. But, if it's infringing on someone's business, yoridum nasa shachaveiro, so that's the way up. Is it a substantial loss? Is it something, if the person would not have bought it anyway, maybe there's no loss at all? On the other hand, perhaps we have the problem that we said, from the Oniyam Naki for Isha's eyes. This law, this Mikri Rosha, someone's a Rosha for benefiting someone's back. Someone's expended tremendous amounts of effort. For non-commercial use, too. Maybe the concept of Yoredim Nosir Shechaveh, infringing someone's business, is only when you come and you want to open and make money, too. Someone has a fish shop, and someone then goes next down the side and gives out fish for free. It's not clear that that would be included in Yoredim Nosir Shechaveh, right? So that would also be a difference. Have a stealing, if it's a question of gezel, ownership, he has stealing, that wouldn't make a difference. Same with copying part of a book. Maybe copying part of a book wouldn't infringe on a person's rights. Could be now in the digital age where it's so easy to copy, so there would be a problem. Everyone would copy part of something, it would cause substantial loss to the creator of the item. And we said there's also the question of monetary claim. If it's considered stealing, now I copy a song, the song's in my, I've got the song now, so I would have to pay for it. However, if it's a question of infringing on a person's business rights, so that would depend if it's a substantial loss or not. And the same with the akum. Someone stealing is forbidden. However, if infringing someone's business rights, it's not clear that always applies to doing that to akum. So there would be a few differences between these things. Interestingly, looking at the Poskim nowadays, one looks at the Frenkel Rambam. Frenkel Rambam, everyone knows, the beautiful Rambam, Shabtai Frenkel, brought out, with the Maftechus in the back. So there's plenty of Haskomas in the beginning. And here, obviously they're not giving Haskomas to the Rambam. They're protecting the rights of Shabtai Frenkel, his copyrights. So if one looks at the Haskoma of Shmuel Vosner, it's quite clear he considers this Rechush Prati. This is his personal public property, this Rambam. So clearly, he seems to learn it's considered stealing. It's possible to have property rights over it. However, if one looks at the Haskam of the Stipler and the son of Chaim Kanievsky, they imply it's a question of damages here. It's not a question of stealing. They use the logic that where you copy and it's going to cause damage, you can't. It has to be a hezek. It has to be proof of damage. So we've seen there is a machlokes in the poskim how to consider these rights. And my father actually once asked from Moshe Shtemuch regarding copying tapes. Friends buy tapes and they copy CDs. So he answered that once you buy it, you buy it. Basically, you can do what you like. He wasn't saying you can go and infringe on a person's, like we're saying, substantial loss. But I suppose his main idea is that it's not considered stealing. On the other hand, Moshe Feinstein, Igris Moshe, seems to imply it is considered stealing. So there's a big tumult, there's a big machlokes in the poskim about it. I'd just like to end off for one more minute. That all this question of ownership, the definition of ownership has big enough ramifications when it comes to sale. When it comes to selling something, He was talking about establishing ownership. So even if it's possible to establish ownership, that might be it's possible. When it comes to selling, to transferring the rights, whether it be through a testament, a will, whether it comes to sale, that is something which requires a lot of clarification whether it's possible to do on something such as these copyrights. What you have merely is a set of rights over copying. How one can transfer these rights is, I think, a topic, should be a topic of discussion. Thank you very much.